Thank you very much. The beginning of the parsha, Vayishlach, the Torah says, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefonav Alei Savachiv Arts HaSeir Sdei Edom. Yaakov sends messengers. We're interpreting Malachim not the way Rashi cites. Rashi says Malachim Mamish. But the simple pshat, as you know, that the word Malach refers to a shliach. And there are many rayas to that. But Rashi has a reason why he translates it as he does. So Yaakov sends Malachim to Esav. And now, look at the content of the mission that they're being directed to do. Pasuk Hey. Vayitzav osom lemor kol somrum la'adoni le'esav. Here's the message they're supposed to deliver. Ko amar abdecho Yaakov im Laban garti vo'echar adoto. That I was living with Laban the last 20 years and I've been delayed. So essentially, what is Yaakov doing? He's trying to reconcile himself with Esav. If you recall, earlier on, what happened, the Torah actually described it. At the end of Parshas Toldos, if you look for a moment in Parshas Toldos, in Perek Chaf Zayin, there we have the brachas that were given to Yaakov, as opposed to Esav, and as a result, the Torah describes the reaction of Esav, which was not a very pleasant one. On Perek Chaf Zayin Pasuk Mem Aleph, Vayistom Esav es Yaakov al habracha shebercha aviv. It's a very striking language that's used that needs attention. Vayistom, what does Vayistom mean? Loshen Sina, but why that specific language that needs attention? If you remind me on another occasion. So Esav tells, essentially, he speaks to himself, Ayama Esa Baliba, but often people speak to themselves, and as Rashi says in Brachos, Aznaim Lakosel, the walls of ears. Yikabui Me'eva Lobi, V'argas Yaakov Achiv. Once the Avelis of my father is over, so then I'll kill Yaakov. And Rivka finds out, and as a result, she tells Yaakov that Esa wants to kill you, and go run to Laban's house, and you'll be there a few days till his anger abates. And then, of course, I will send for you. And that's what Rivka indicates to Yaakov. Then she speaks to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak also gives Yaakov a bracha and tells him to go to the house of Bisuel. And that's what Yaakov does. As you know, the Haftarah, Vayivrach Yaakov Stearum. So now, this is 20 years later, beginning of Vayishlach. And what does Yaakov decide? Now I have to go ahead and engage in some sort of reconciliation with Esav, Pius. And not only that, but he tells him the following. Im Laban Garti, B'tariyak mitzvah shamarti. Why would Esav care about what exactly his personal behavior in the house of Laban is all about? The fact that he observed tariyak mitzvahs, that itself needs attention. But whatever the case is, somehow Yaakov feels the need to send words of pius to Esav and not to wage war against him. Chazal tell us, you probably are familiar with it, that Yaakov prepared himself for three things. What are they? War, two, tefillah, three, matanos. And that term actually is found three times in three different settings. You're familiar with Vayigash. Yehuda also planned a three-pronged tripartite methodology in terms of Yosef. They didn't know it was Yosef. And you have it here. You also have it Elio in Tanakh. Three times in Tanakh you have this notion. And so that's what he prepared himself. So the Ramban here, beginning of Vayishlach, quotes from Chazal. The Chazal came with a taina against Yaakov Avinu. Chazal say about him the following, and they call the pasuk in Mishlei Perek Chavav. Ramban refers to it: Machzik Vazne Kelev Al Riv Lolo. There is a dog walking on the street. You're walking on one side; he's walking on the other side. And every day you are moving about, and you take your shpatzir, and the dog takes his shpatzir. He doesn't bother you. You don't bother him. One day he decides to go ahead and what? And grab the ears of the dog. And guess what the dog does? He starts yelping. Y-E-L-P-I-N-G. Noach is not here. Oh, you are. Sorry. I know I need you for translation. So the dog responds, obviously. So Chazal say that's exactly what Yaakov did. He decided to pull the ears of the dog being Esav. Who asked him? The dog is, shall we say, Esav lying dormant for 20 years. Everything is fine and tranquil. Why would he suddenly start up with Esav? So the Ramban quotes this. The Ramban says, who asked him to begin with Esav? Esav is living in Shvei Adom. He's not pursuing him. Why are you sending Shlichim to go ahead and appease him, and somehow you feel the need to reconcile? This will just arouse his indignation, his wrath, correct? That 20 years already was dormant, and now once again will be aroused, and guess what? He will want to bite you. Ramban refers to the Medrash, it's a long Medrash over here. And so that's the issue that the Ramban presents over here. I once heard from my Rebbe, HaGoyin Nisim Albert Zatzal, he cited this Ramban. But we know that the Ramban has another klal, which is the most important klal in the Chumash that the Ramban has, especially in Bereishis, called Maise Avos Simul Banim, which has many different manifestations. And I can't, that would need 100 hours to discuss what that principle encompasses. But he felt, my Rebbe, that once one of the Avos acts in a certain kind of way, even though it may have been inappropriate, as Chazal take him to task and the Ramban cites the Chazal, once he acts in that fashion, myself is him the bottom. It becomes embedded in history. And this becomes a model for us to follow in subsequent generations. But the Ramban he writes, I'm just reading the further the Ramban, he says that Yaakov Avinu, he showed tremendous hachna to Esav. What does he keep calling him? And Chazal take him to task for that. Look at Perek Lamed Beis over here. You notice the language. How does he describe Esav? One term that he uses again and again. Start with Pasuk Hey. Vayitzav osom lema kosomrun ladoni. What does Adoni mean? My master. Look a bit further. Pasuk Zayin. Vayili shor v'chamor otzom v'yev v'shivcha v'eshra lahagid ladoni lim tzolchein v'einav. I'm trying to find favor in my master's eyes. So Kesedah, he calls him my master. My master. And as a result of that, the Ramban says, Klal Yisrael, in effect, had to subdue themselves and subordinate themselves before Edom, because Maisa Avos Simul Banim. So the Ramban writes, and this is part of Maisa Avos, means if Yaakov goes ahead and demonstrates a kind of obeisance, that's the proper term, Noach, O-B-E-I-S-A-N-C-E, referring to? Okay, but it's a bit more than obedience. Obeisance already implies that I'm kowtowing to the other person, almost to the point of being servile. I'm sorry? Chad, you're the other man who's familiar with English. He received an education. What? Exactly. Being what? Submissive. Submissive, but submissive almost in a fashion which, of course, is, to a certain extent, even emasculating my own identity as a result of it. So that's the notion of obeisance. So here the Pasuk says, if Yaakov's machdi himself, subsequently, that's going to cause, will have major repercussions for Klal Yisrael. For example, in the days of Rome, that Rome will literally lord over us with arrogance. On the other hand, myself, a simul banim, means that we have to behave in such a fashion. I think you're familiar with the Ramban, you probably are. I mentioned it to someone this morning, I forgot who it was. Menachem Begin, Zichrono Livracha, the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, he actually was a Briska. If I'm not mistaken, he grew up in Brisk, and he was actually an outstanding person. He was someone, one of the few prime ministers in the State of Israel, who really had a connection to Judaism, to Shmiras HaMitzvahs. He was an observant Jew. And his, if I'm not mistaken, father was married by the Brisk Rav. It was Masada Kedusha, and his father was Chasana, his parents Chasana. So he had a connection to Brisk and a connection to Rav Soloveitchik. And so it's Yadua that when Menachem Begin was the one, as you know, that there's a peace treaty with Egypt, Anwar Sadat, he's the one who actually consummated that peace treaty. Before he did that, he came to the United States, and he met, obviously, with the President of the United States, but he also met, La'avdil, with several Gedolei Yisrael. He met with Harav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal, Harav Hutner Zatzal, Harav Ruderman Zatzal, Major Rosh Yeshiva, in the home of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein on the Lower East Side. He also wanted to meet with Rav Soloveitchik, but the Rav thought that he should go to visit him as opposed to he coming to visit the Rav, because the Rav said Rashi in Chumash, Rashi quotes in Shmos, V'yardu kol avadecha eilei elai, mikan shechol can cover the malchus. He's a melech, he's a prime minister. I have to show him the proper derecheres, the proper respect. So at the end, he made sure that he came to the Rav to talk to him because he felt the Rav was the Gadol Hador. And both the Rav and the other Gadol Yisrael that I mentioned a moment ago, who met in the Lower East Side, told Menachem Begin the same thing. They told him he should study Parshas Vayishlach before he goes ahead and consummates this peace treaty with Sadat. Why? Because I assume you're familiar with the Chazal. Chazal tell us that Rebbe, Rabbi Yudah Nasi, Rabbi Judah the Prince, the redactor of the, thank you, the redactor of the Mishnayos. So Rabbi Judah the Prince, whenever he had to meet representatives of the Roman government, some, not everyone understands Hebrew as you do. So when he had to meet members of the Roman government, so he would examine this parsha in order to know how do I go about interacting with, shall we say, people of that stature. And once the Bereishis Rabba writes in Ayin Ches, Rabban refers to it, the Bereishis Rabba points out one day he didn't examine the parsha and there was harm that was caused. Why? Because my servant, Simon Labanim, from this parsha one could actually derive tremendous lessons. And this was told to Menachem Begin by whom? By these two, shall we say, these two encounters. One, the encounter with the four Gadol of Yisrael, and the other, the encounter with the other Gadol of Yisrael, or the Ras Holovitchik. Astounding. And despite the fact that Yaakov Avinu is attempting to have a reconciliation from his estranged brother Esau, but at the same time, he is, shall we say, careful and maintaining a certain degree of distance. Yes, if you read the Psukim, you are familiar with the fact that he sends to Esav words of shalom, words of friendship. But Chazal say, look in Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Chav Gimel, if you have it in front of you. The Rav, Zatzal, had a lot to say about this Psukim, but I can't share everything Soloveitchik said in one setting. It's not possible. But I will mention something else, which is found in Rashi. In Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Chav Gimel, it said that here the message is being described. He's telling the messengers what they should tell Esav. In Psukim, notice the first you see the Matanos, correct? Yudalin, Vayolin Shem Balaylahu, Vayikach Menabah B'yodah, Mincha Esav Achim. He brought him a present. The Torah describes the presents in Psukim Tezvav, Tezayin, and then Yud Zayin, and then it tells you the message. And Yutches, and Yutes, and Chof. And then, after all these psukim, we have the following. The Torah says in Perek Lamed Beis, right over here in this context, so it mentions that Pasuk Chav Gimel, Vayakam Balaylahu, Vayikach Eshnei Noshe, Veshnei Shivchosa, Vesachar Asayolodov, Vayavor Es Ma'avar Yabok. He crossed the Ma'avar Yabok. So he took with him Achara Sayyulodov, 10 of his white children. So Rashi asks the famous question. Says Rashi, Vidina Hechanoisa. Where was Dina? So Rashi answers, he put her in a box and he closed the door of the box. Shalayitem ba Esav Einav. So Esav should not see her. What does that mean? It means, okay, we have to make shalom, but who says we have to become michutanim with this shegetz? Pardon the expression. Shalom. I can use the term. Shalom is here. However, Chazal say that there was a tviya on Yaakov, and Rashi quotes it. Why was Yaakov punished? That maybe she could have what? Been the car of him and brought him back. And instead, what happened? Rahmanul Litzlan, she fell to the hands of somebody else. Shechem ben Hamor. So the Alto Slabotke asked the following question. Is that the din? That I have to marry off my daughter to a Russia? To a wicked person? Why? Because maybe she'll be Mekarvim and he'll do tshuva? Doesn't it say in the Gemara that you have to look for a Bas Tam Chacham, not marry not marry off your daughter to a Rasha? So this Alta Slabodka says something very fascinating. I heard this from our Rabbeim many, many times. The Alta Slabodka says, yes, Yaakov did that which is correct. However, he put Dina in the box the way Rashi quotes the Lashon and the Medrash, and he closed the door. And Chazal did not have in mind that she should have married Esav. However, there was a problem. He closed the door of the box too tight. That is to say, the Elta Sabotka says, I actually went looking for this to find his Lashon. And I found his Lashon, and he says the following, that Lo Yotzorech Liskor Tateva Chazak Midai. What does that mean? It doesn't mean, in a literal sense, not to close the door with a double lock. But what does it mean?
Don't completely shut it out.
Exactly. Don't totally lock the door where the possibility, it should have bothered him. He should have had pangs of guilt, the fact that he could not marry his daughter to Esav. What did he do? He just locked the door so shut, so tight, hermetically sealed, as it were. Well, not hermetically, she had to breathe. That is what the issue is. And therefore, we find actually something also of an interesting nature of a similar thing. If you remember when the brachas that were given by Yaakov to, by Yitzchak to Yaakov, so how does Esav react? Look in Perek, where was it again? In Perek Chavzai. Look in Perek Chavzai. If you remember, once Esav reveals that there's someone came, preceded him, and received the bracha, so what is his reaction? The Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Torah says, Kishma Esav is Dibri Aviv, Vayitzak Tzaaka, Gedola, Umara, Admo. He lets out a bitter cry. So Chazal said Yaakov was punished. Why? Because he's the one who caused Esav to let out this bitter cry. By the way, Chazal also see in this pasuk, another pasuk in Tanakh, namely, one that you should be familiar with. And Megillas Esther, thank you. And Chazal see a midah keneged midah. That the ownership Yaakov received was that the children of Esav otherwise maybe not have, would not have interacted with the children of Yaakov in such a fashion, but subsequently, in Shushan Abira, Haman HaGogi, Haman of course is a descendant of whom? Of Esav. And what happened? There's a gzera that Klal Yisrael should be Lahashman Laura Gadabi, it's called Yudim Minavi Adzokain. And as a result of that gzera, Mordechai Atzadik, Vayizak, Zoka Gdolo Umara, same Zoka Gdolo Umara as found over the Megillas Esther. And in effect, one corresponds to the other. That's a medrash quoted by Gedoli HaRishonim. Now, it's true, whatever Yaakov did, he did it based on what? Because who told him to do what he did? Namely, he received the bracha, his mother, Rivka. And how did she tell him based on what? Based on the nevuah that she received, on the prophecy that she obviously received. That's what Unkelus writes. You want to see that in Unkelus? It's very nice, a beautiful Unkelus in the Perek of Zion. Who is worried about maybe his father will discover whom he is? Because Esav is a hirsute fella, and I'm a smooth guy. I look like an imposter, and I'll be cursed. His mother said, don't worry, the curse will be on me. That's Perek Chavzayin Pasuk Gimel. So Rashi has his comment, and the Targum Unkelus says over here, his mother said, don't worry. You will not be cursed. Why? Binavua. I received this binavua. That's what the Targum says. It's not the literal translation, but that's what the Targum says over here, that she received binavua, and therefore, but certainly what the Alta Slabodka is saying is that Yaakov should have had tremendous pain over the fact that look what I'm doing. That I'm compelled to fool my father, and as a result, Esav is going to react in this kind of a fashion, which can, chas v'sholom, have massive ramifications, which of course it did, l'dorei doros. You know the pasuk you're familiar with, that Esav and Yaakov, what does it say in Chazal, halacha, Esav seinei l'Yaakov. There's an eternal hatred between Esav and Yaakov. There's an Netziv, has a, you know, the Netziv wrote a kuntres on anti-Semitism, that's kedai to read. I assume you probably are familiar with it. It was actually published separately. It was initially published in the back of his parish on Shir HaShir. You probably are familiar with that. But then it's been published separately. A separate Kunch's anti-Semitism, where he discussed this Chazal, Halach of Esau, son of Yaakov. That is an eternal hatred. And where did it come from? Right here. Came from the Brachas. That created an eternal hatred. So, I believe the reason why Chazal are telling us all this, and I mentioned at the very beginning, Ma'is Avasim Labanim, is really, to a large extent, we have to understand how do we interact with the nations of the world. What should be our posture towards the nations of the world? So Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, I mentioned this already once before, said that it's embedded in Chayei Sarah in one pasuk, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem, which means on the one hand, we have to be what? We certainly have to be very much a part of the world at large that we live in, and to interact and to contribute to society to the extent that we can in all different types of ways. But religiously, spiritually, we have to be clearly Gerim. We are both Gerim and Toshav. Now, how do you do this? Of course, if you have Briska, you have no problem. Tzvei Dinin, dialectic, no problem handling this kind of dualism. But in real life, it's not so simple, as you can imagine. But I believe from this parasha also, one can derive something of a similar nature. Namely, on the one hand, we should try to, shall we say, have good relationship with the non-Jewish world. On the other hand, it should not be of such an intimate, close nature where we become, shall we say, overly friendly with them, or as the poet said, good fences make good neighbors. There has to be a distance between us and them, and it's not easy. As you know, that in Europe, for example, certainly if you're, I assume you study Jewish history, or European history, or world history, or some history. That's a pasuk in Chumash. You have to study history, by the way. What pasuk am I referring to? Zechor Yemos Olam, Binu Shnos Dor V'Dor. A pasuk in Chumash. What? Hazino. Tells you have to study history. Zechor Yemos Olam, Binu Shnos Dor V'Dor. That's a mocker for studying history. Sorry? Thank you. I don't think it would make a difference if it was the second Aliyah either. But here you have a pasuk that tells you, and the one who speaks about it is Avachan Vassaman, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha. He points this out, but many have mentioned it already. And in Europe, for example, there were Jews, as you know, that we were, to a large extent, Jews had a very difficult time in Europe. I just heard this morning that in Denmark, they're considering banning circumcision, banning Bris Mila. Usually they spend a lot of time trying to ban Shechita, now they're trying to ban Bris Mila, and it's very hard to convince the non-Jew of the importance of Bris Mila. To them, it seems like we are engaged in self-mutilation. And the truth is, Avraham Avinu was very concerned about Bris Mila as well. Why? Because he was worried that till now he was able to be Makarev the entire world, and this may literally create a massive drive a wedge between himself and the rest of the world. Chazal tells us in Medrash like that, and nothing has changed, as you can see. And Jews in Denmark are concerned about it. But Jews in Europe, we know that they were, to a large extent, they were pursued, and unfortunately they still are being pursued, a lot of anti-Semitism. And at one point, when the emancipation came along, the Haskalah, as you're familiar with, the Haskalah movement, correct? So many Jews saw an opportunity to leave religion, to abandon the Torah. First they translated the Tanakh into German. Mendelssohn, as you know what happened subsequently with him, his family assimilated, apostatized, became non-Jewish completely. And Jews thought that by virtue of, shall we say, no longer davening in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, but using German and the like, they'll be able to become closer to the non-Jewish world. And as a result, they will obviously be able to integrate and the non-Jewish world will accept us. But we know what happened in Nazi Germany. Even Jews who were not observant, people who went on the Holocaust trips and the like, know very well that it didn't make a difference whatsoever whether the Jew was observant or not. At the end of the day, Jews were persecuted, whether they were observant or not observant. And today, to a certain extent, actually, as we know, assimilation is probably the most debilitating of all causes that will ultimately, that could theoretically and potentially kill us. Thank God we're not as pursued today as we were then. I mean, in days of yore. But the fact of the matter is that assimilation is a massive issue, and acculturation is a massive issue. Someone just told me, a rabbi in a college campus in the United States, he told me that the level or the rate of assimilation of intermarriage on the college campuses is in the area of 70-80%. Unbelievable. Noach, are you familiar with that? On college campuses. I imagine intermarriage outside the college campus is a bit less, or am I wrong? I hope I'm wrong. But it's pretty high percentage. And the fact of the matter is that to a certain extent, we're really doing a very tensile balancing act, a relationship with non-Jews, and I'm talking about outside of Eretz Yisrael, primarily as opposed to in Eretz Yisrael. And here we have, as you know, the Torah describes in this week's Parsha, the encounter between Yaakov and Esav, and prior to that we had the Sar Shel Esav, the Malach Shel Esav, a very difficult Parsha, who is wrestling with Yaakov Kol HaLaila, and finally back and forth, and the Yaakov Avinu seems to be, shall we say, pardon the expression, trumping the Sar Shel Esav. I use the verb a lot now, since he became the president-elect. I just can't resist it. It says, Ki Sarisa im Elokim im Anoshim Atuchal. But what does the Malach do? The Malach succeeds in doing what? Vateka kafyerach Yaakov beyavko imo. And what's that a remez? It's a remez to all the, shall we say, assimilation and acculturation and intermarriage or whatever other, shall we say, secular kind of culture invades us. And all this came as a result of the Malach somehow, shall we say, successfully being nogea but kafyerach Yaakov. And that is what the Torah says that subsequently Al-Kain here, Pasuk Lamed Beis over there, Perek Lamed Beis, Al-Kain le-Yochum and Yisrael's Gid Anoshe, Asher Al-Kaf Ha-Yorech Ha-Riyom Azer Ki Naga, Le-Kaf Yerech Yaakov Begid Anoshe. Since you mentioned to me, Ari, about Avoshe Vais, I'm going to Avoshe Vais, so I thought I would add something, if you don't mind, and we're going to Gid Anoshe. You know, the Yisrael Gid Anoshe, I happen to be teaching the Perek in Chulin, Gid Anoshe, on Shabbos. I learned other things besides Kedusha. I hope you don't mind. Anyway, so in Gid Anoshe, the Gemara there in Chulin actually points out that if you cook Gid Anoshe together with Heter, of course the Heter becomes Asa because Gid Anoshe is Asa. It has Tam HaIsur. It says on the Pasuk, Al King, the Elchim says Gid Anoshe. The Tam HaIsur is Nivla, is absorbed by the Heter. And the Gemara says about the Gid Anoshe in Chulin Tzadik Tes, it says that if Gid Anoshe is cooked with Machal Kosher, as long as there's no shuman, as long as there's no fat of the gid, so then the machal hakosher doesn't become asr. Why? The lashon gemara is, as you mentioned, if you hold ein begid menos ein tam, there's machlokas, but the yesh begid menos ein tam, or ein begid menos ein tam, but if you hold ein begid menos ein tam, the gemara's lashon is, gid anoshe eitzu. It's like a tree. It's like a piece of wood. Va'atorah chiva alav. The gid anoshe itself is asr, but doesn't have the ability to give over tam to another machol kosher. That's ein begid menos ein tam. It's machol kastanoim, but la'aloch we paskin ein begid menos ein tam. So it doesn't give over the tam, iser, to something else. So now the question is, it may begid menos ein tam. That's what I was going to discuss with you earlier when you spoke to me about this. So why did the Torah say it's asa to eat the gid anoshe? It's only an eitz. It's a piece of wood. It's desiccated. It has no tam to it. Why should it be asa? So Marabim used to say the following. They said that maybe the Gid Anoshe is Asa Bachila. You know why? Because the Sar of Esav was Nogea B'chaf Yerach Yaakov. Because he went ahead and hit Yaakov in that area, he was machnis somehow the Tumah into Yaakov Avinu. That's why it's Asa. Even though I don't think it's a Pashup shot in this matter, but otherwise it's difficult to understand exactly the whole issue. But the point being that the fact that Esav came into contact with Yaakov Avinu and apparently affected him, that one should not take any hand off of the Yetzer Hara. And Esav represents the Yetzer Hara. And it's true, there ain't the Gid Menos in Tam. But the fact of the matter is, the Torah said it's also the Gid Anoshe, even though it has no Tam, as a remez to what happened over here in this encounter between Yaakov and the Sar Shel Esav. And I just want to, on that, make one comment. The Yetzer Hara that we have to fight on an ongoing basis attempts to take us out of all the worlds, not just from Olam Haba, but even from Olam Hazeh. And that's the mistake that often people make. They think that the Yetzer Hara is just addressing Olam Haba. It's not correct. The Yetzer Hara essentially wants us in this world as well. Chazal actually talk a lot about this. There's an interesting comment in Chazal. If you leave a gedi or a tle, a young little shepsel, how shall we translate that, Noach? A young little goat. If you leave a young little goat near a nachash or an akra, near a scorpion, correct? nothing will happen. Because somehow, shall we say, the little Gidi will know to be careful from the Nachash of the Akrav. If you leave, let's say, a little baby, Al Yad Nachash Akrav, what's going to happen? The little baby will attempt to touch the Nachash Akrav, and God forbid, might be subject to Neshicha. It might be bitten by the Nachash of the Akrav. So, the Medrash talks about it. And why is there a difference? So the Medrash answers, Ki Yetzer Lev Ha'Adam Ra Minura, Pasuk in the beginning of Bereshis, person born with the Yetzer Hara, Mishenina Lotzeis Me'imo Nita Bo Yetzer Hara. So already, at a very young age, a person has the Yetzer Hara to do things that might put my life in Sakana. So therefore, the Tleh, there's no Yetzer Hara, correct? And the Yetzer Hara has no, doesn't make any effort to do anything with him. But a little child, the Yetzer Hara already is at work. And the Yetzer Hara wants to take us out not only of this world, but of the next world for sure, but certainly from this world. The reason why I mention this in the context of, shall we say, what is about to happen, namely the Yom Tov of Chanukah, which is Baruch Hashem, Abba Aleinu Letova. During the days of the Syrian Greeks, I don't know how much you've read. Maybe you read Megillas Antiochus. Maybe you read Chashmonaim Aleph and Bet. Maybe you read Maccabees. Maybe you read any of this, any of the above. I assume you're familiar with it. Some of it, all of it, none of it. It's kedai to read what's going on. There was a problem of intermarriage then as well. Chazal tell us the famous, the Gemara at the end of Sukkah, the last daf in Sukkah, you're probably familiar with the Gemara. The Gemara tells a story there about a woman who came from Mishpach of Kohanim, Miriam Bas Bilga. That was her name. Miriam, the daughter of Bilga. It says in the Gemara, Shehemira Dasa, she apostatized. She left her religion. She married one of the aristocrats of the Syrian Greeks. When the Syrian Greeks entered the Beis HaMikdash, she would kick with her sandal on the Mizbech, and she said, Lucas, Lucas, referring to the Mizbech, how long are you going to waste the money of the Jewish people? We're bringing karbanos, cost money. Why are you wasting their money? So, the problem of assimilation and intermarriage existed then also. It's not of recent vintage, unfortunately. But then what happened was, you know, the Gemara of the Zohar, when the Bezan and the Chashmonaim prevailed over the Syrian Greeks, so there were goes there, in effect, all kinds of xeros, all kinds of harchokos, with, in terms of our interaction with the non-Jewish world, and all this was to prevent, essentially, assimilation. So it's interesting. Who were the first people to fight against assimilation? Shimon Levi, in this week's Pasha. They are the initial, shall we say, the front line. Shechem goes ahead, and I have what to say about that Pasha, but again, it needs mamish 100 hours to examine the psukim in that Pasha. Shechem goes ahead and grabs the daughter of Yaakov, and let's say he even is willing to undergo some sort of a giyur conversion, albeit it seems to be of a maris ayin nature. That's what the Torah presents it. But Shimon Levi are not interested. They kill off the entire city of Shechem. Yaakov is not happy. But what is Yaakov not happy about? If you read the psukim carefully. What? Yaakov, the way the Torah describes it again, that I'm surrounded by all types of, shall we say, people who are clearly not in favor of the kind of activity that you engaged in, and I'm going to be hurt. And their response is, Hachzono yaseh sachoseinu. What? You're going to take our sister, make her into a Achmad al-Lasana Zona. So it's very fascinating that Yaakov gives them Tochacha. He gives them, he chastises them. That we see also at the end of the Sefer in Vayechi. But they're Moshe Nefesh to defend their sister. And what's very interesting, that Levi becomes, the way the Ram describes Hilchos Avodah Zarah, a manhig in Am Yisrael. The Ram calls him Rosh Hashiva. That's Rosh Hashiva in Perek Aleph Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Alach Gimel, Rosh Hashiva, Mitzrayim. Who emerges from Levi? Amram, Yocheved, Moshe, Aaron, Miriam. And in subsequent generations, Pinchas, Matisyahu, Banav, and Shevet Levi are the ones who essentially hold on to the Torah. Yov, Shvatecha, Yaakov, Sarascha, Yisrael. They're the ones who maintain that, those embers, the glowing embers. On the other hand, the Shevet of Shimon, Kimat, what do we know about them in the history of Am Yisrael? Very little. And if anything, when they emerge in a way which is not the most positive, such as I'm talking about in the Pasha Pinchas, namely what happened, Zimri goes ahead and takes Befahesia, the Gemara Sanhedrin, but he took the Chumash before the Gemara Sanhedrin. He marries Befahesia, a Bas Nachrim, he causes the Magefa, 24,000 people die. From where? From Shevet Shimon. Why is there a distinction? Why is it that here we have two people who are involved in this act of zealotry, Shimon Velevi, and yet the one that emerges somehow in the most beautiful way is Shimon Levi, or Levi, and the one that emerges in not such a beautiful way is Shimon. So perhaps the distinction is in terms of the tochacha that was given to them by Yaakov and what they did in Shechem. And the tochacha is found right here in Chumash. If you have a Chumash, look in Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Lamed. And then, before Yaakov died, let's look here first. Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Lamed. Here the Torah says, as you mentioned, Aryeh, Vayom Yaakov Shimon V'Alevi Achartem Osi. The word Achartem means you have sullied me. You have dirtied me. You have polluted me. Labisheni B'Yoshev Aretz Baknani V'Aprizi V'Ani M'Sei Nisbar. My numbers are few. As you mentioned, I'll be completely and totally obliterated. I'll be destroyed. And of course, the reaction is what I mentioned a second later. Not only that, later on in Perek Memtes, in Vayechi, look at Vayechi for a moment, Perek Memtes, where Yaakov gives him Tochacha also, Sukim, Hey, Vav, and Zayin. Shimon V'Levi Achim. What does the Torah say? Yaakov tells him, Klei Hamas. We know about those people. Klei Hamas, Michael Roseyan. Besodim atavu nafshi, bekalam atecha kvodi, ki biapam harguishu, betsodim ikushar. Orra pam kiyaz, he curses their anger. And achal ki biyakub afitza miyisrael. So apparently, Kanirah Shimon did not take the tochach of Yaakov to heart. That's why he was nichshal subsequently. And it could also be that Moshe Rabbeinu, later on, when he blesses the Shifta Yisrael before his death, in the end of Sefer Dvarim, he tells Shevet Levi, there the Lashon is, Yoru Mishpatecha de Yaakov, Visarascha de Yisrael. Yasim Bukatara V'Apecha, V'Chalil Amizvechecha. I don't know if you remember the Psukim that I found actually at the end of Sefer Dvarim. There Moshe Rabbeinu actually, the language he uses is a Lashon of Bracha. While Shevet Shimon, he doesn't give them a Bracha at all. Look in Dvarim for a second. Paraklam Gimel Pasuk Zayin. There, he doesn't bless them in a direct kind of way. Only Beremez. Ramban discusses it over there. Ramban and Chumash. You notice in Dvarim, look in Perek, Lamed Gimel, at the end of Dvarim. Take a look at the Shvatim and how they are presented. Who is first? Reuven, that's a pasuk. Vav. Chi Reuven Valyamos. Who's next?
Yehuda.
Who's after Yehuda?
Levi.
Who's after Levi? To Levi. Look at Levi for 1 second. A pasuk Yud. Yo, Shvatecha the Yaakov, and Sarascha the Yisrael. After Levi, Binyamin. After Binyamin, Yosef, and on and on and on. Who's missing?
Shimon
is missing. So, Chazal, the Ramban refers it to right over here. Ramban says, you know where Shimon is found in the Remez? Namely, in Pasuk Zayin, Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda. There, there's a remez to whom? To Shimon. Why? Because Levi, as a result of the Tochacha, he took the Tochacha of Yaakov to heart, and Shimon did not. That's what Ramban writes. It's Perish Al Torah. The truth is, there's another place in Tanakh where Shimon appears in a positive way, in Divrei Hayomim. We don't have Divrei Hayomim here. And Divrei Hayomim there mentions among the Bnei Shimon went to Har Seir and they eliminated Amalek. I think it's a Divrei Hayomim Aleph in Perek Dalet, if I'm mistaken. I'm not that familiar with Divrei Hayomim as I should be. But it's in Perek Dalet of Divrei Hayomim. So there it mentions, but other than that, we don't find in Tanakh, as far as I know, any positive element to Shimon. But Shevet Levi, only positive. Isn't that amazing? I'll call upon him. It's clear that we have to follow Shevet Levi. On the one hand, Shevet Levi, as you know, has the qualities of Aaron HaKohen, which is Oyev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Oyev Sabrios, Umekarvan, Batorah, but they also have the Kanoos of Pinchas, Svei Dinim. Vein Shom Stira B'neim, there's no contradiction. When there's a need, they can take a Romach and they can fight. Matisyo, who's among the descendants of Aaron HaKohen, when there's a need, he kills the Assyrian Greek and the Hellenist, and he goes out to war against the Assyrian Greeks. Somehow, that's the derech of Yaakov Avinu. On the one hand, we want shalom with Esav. We want to be able to come to peace with Esav. On the other hand, you're also ready to engage him in battle if necessary. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the psukim that I sort of glossed over, and with this we shall be messiahing. Look at Pereshit Perek Lamed Beis, psukim Yud Ches and Yud Tes, in this week's Pasha. So there, the Torah tells us what the message of Yaakov Avinu, when he sends the mincha to Esav, he says, Ki yivgoshcha Esav achi. You have it? If you look, Ari, in the Treasury of Tradition, which is published about 35 years ago, there's an article taken from the RCA record, this is just between you and me, Rav Soloveitchik addressed these psukim in a most unbelievable fashion. There he's talking about ecumenism, namely dialogue between ourselves and the Catholic Church, and the Rav uses these psukim to discuss that issue. If you remind me, we'll try to find it and we'll show it to you. It's just an editorial comment there. He's very connected through his family to Rav Soloveitchik. Father, grandfather, probably goes back to other Marishon. But anyway, it says here, Kiev Goshcha, the Gemara says in Baba Tzia, you know what the Gemara says, a person who has Torah for three generations, if you have more than three generations, you're assured, Lanetzach, you'll have Torah in your Mishpacha. All of you, it applies to not just Ari, but he and I have a psychological dialogue. Anyway, so in Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayitzavis HaRishon Lemor, Kiev Goshcha Esav Achi, when you meet Esav, Ushel Chalemor, what the Rav does with these psukim is mind-boggling. But the simple pshat is, who are you? And where are you going? And who are these people in front of you? What's the question when it says, Limiata? Rashi says, who sent you? And what's the answer? Yaakov is the one who's sending this present to Esau. But perhaps we could say here, the way the Rav wanted to say, Limiata, to whom do you belong? What is your destiny? That's how the Rav interpreted this book in his own existential kind of fashion. It's something very beautiful. And the answer is, La'avdachal Yaakov, that even though there's a mincha that's going to Esav, we are not, shall we say, we are Yaakov Avinu, we are his descendants, we're not part of Esav. And again, the question, as I said, that not an easy tensile balance that one has to somehow, when you interact with the non-Jewish world, one has to be exceptionally careful not to be ensnared by them. People here go to universities, sometimes even secular universities. And when you're on a secular college campus, and even when you are not on a secular college campus, you can be easily influenced and impacted by the environment that you're there. The Rambam writes, as you know, speaks about the impact of environment and also peer pressure, and those are qualities that only if a person has armed himself and is able to have sharoshim that are deeply embedded in Torah, will you be able to somehow stave off the world at large. It's not a simple thing. That's why you have to spend many years learning Torah, mitzvah shen, the rest of your life, admeav yesem shana, an ongoing battle that we are engaged in, and Yaakov is the one who's really a model par excellence how we have to engage the non-Jewish world. You have to follow the derech of Yaakov Avinu. Of course, we have to be Oavei Shalom and Rodfei Shalom, like Aaron HaKohen. But Mitzat Sheni, when there's a need to go ahead and battle and put up a fight, we have to be ready to do so as well. And whether it's against the non-Jewish world or against Jews who are assimilating, the way Matisyo did, that's how we have to go ahead and, in effect, take that double, dual kind of stance. That's what I'll let you call the stance of Ger v'toshav anochi imochem. And that's exactly what we have here as well. L'dorom, l'tfila, u'l'milchama. Very beautiful idea, all modeled by Yaakov Avinu. He's really the model par excellence in terms of interacting with the Ummah Sola. Malabai, we should become, as I said, asharoshim, should become deeply, deeply rooted in Torah, and thereby we'll have the strength and absorb the values osmotically of the Torah in order to be able to both, on the one hand, shall we say, interact with the secular world and with the non-Jewish world in a positive way. On the other hand, maintain our own fidelity to our own religion and to our own destiny.